Today's guest is Ryan Von Steinen from JB Import Automotive and Repair. Now, Ryan has been a part of this business for the last 10 plus years and been a huge part of the success they've had over that time. JB Import, however, is not a new business, and they opened their doors back in the 1970s in St. Pete, Florida. So they've been around for quite some time, just like Ryan's passion for cars that was developed at an early age. But he also has a knack for leading a team, and it's been a big part of JB Import changing the game when it comes to how your car is serviced. And their approach is really something that other businesses could adapt, whether you're in the service or selling a product. Now, in my chat with Ryan, we discussed this approach of transparency and communication, the importance of culture in a business, and we also talk about some of Ryan's favorite cars. This is an episode that I really enjoyed, and I hope you do as well. So if so, share it with a friend or two who you think might enjoy it as well. All right, here we go. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Donnie, thanks for having me here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm excited to kind of learn more about your business. So your business is JB Import Automotive and Repair.
Yeah.
And you guys are located in St. Pete, you said, downtown St.
Pete? Yeah, we're downtown St. Petersburg. I like to tell people 6 blocks north of Tropicana on 16th Street. And we've been there since 1979. So it's a long time.
Yeah.
St. Pete business. Yeah.
So you must be doing something right if you've been there that long.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a long run, and I feel like we're making huge ground here, improving ourselves because St. Pete's just growing so much. You know,
yeah.
It's been a unique opportunity to grow with the city.
Yeah. That's really cool. So how long have you been involved in the company? Because you don't look like you're old enough to be there from 1979.
Yeah. I've been there. Little over 10 years. I'm a partner in the company now. There's two gentlemen that have owned it since late 99, early 2000. So they've been there about 24 years. We're going to work together for several years going forward. But yeah, the idea is move into that myself.
Yeah. How did you get started in cars? Like, where does this passion come from? And tell me about that.
Cars is my whole life, but there's a moment when I was a kid that I remember that like really got the wheels turning. And many people have had a Power Wheels. And when you have a Power Wheels, there's a low and a high button. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Michigan, and I got it for Christmas. We were riding in the basement. And when my dad flipped that switch to high, and then I drove it and experienced that speed rush, I feel like that was a pivotal moment for me about 5 or 6 years old, you know, that really changed things, which just led into like an obsession in teenage years. And taking lots of auto tech, auto body classes in high school. And then I went on to an automotive school, but it's a university because I wanted to get a degree. So I have an applied science degree in high performance automotive.
Okay.
And once I got out of that, I'd spent time in customer service with like soccer and indoor sports. And I realized pretty quick in the car industry that I didn't enjoy working on the cars, but I enjoyed working with the people. So I transitioned to the front end, and I've kind of been doing that for 16, 17 years now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So it started out as a passion for like the cars itself. Is it like a passion? Well, maybe it's not like for the mechanics of the car, or is it just like what the car can do, like the speed and like that feeling?
I think, you know, if I'm talking about us collectively as a group, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We all like fixing things, and I'm even of that same mindset, but I like taking a step back, right, and working on the things with the shop instead of the things with an individual car.
Sure.
You know?
That makes sense.
So, yeah. No, it's a group where everybody's on a pretty similar path with that as far as liking cars. And then some of us take it to another level with like motorsports and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where like the speed aspect of...
Yeah. And there's several of us that are all about that too.
Yeah.
And that's been a huge passion for me in life. Like I don't watch football or baseball. Just watch like endurance racing and Formula One, stuff like that. So
yeah, so I'm assuming you watched, I forget what it was called, the Netflix series on about
Formula One. So I haven't, and this is a weird bit about me is I don't like reality TV.
You know what
I mean? So
yeah.
So I feel like there's probably a lot of like drama in it, and I'm like
for sure.
I know the sport pretty well. I keep up pretty well. And also I have a 6-year-old, so it's just hard to like devote the time. You know,
yeah.
I've heard lots of good things. It has done incredible things. For Formula One in the United States, like humongous game they've done here. So it's got a lot of positive things. It's just not my cup of tea. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting, right? Because to me, it's like behind the scenes, right? There is drama and stuff involved, right?
Sure.
But it's like behind the scenes of the sport itself. That's something I like about
Yeah.
Like other sports, like football and baseball and stuff.
Well, and in that way, for someone who's not into Formula One, it's really given a big glimpse because it's so
what it's like,
you know, coveted or covered much of the time. So it has been like a, like I said, like a huge thing for many people. It's just something I've been watching since Mika Hakkinen in the late 90s.
You know?
So yeah, it's been a passion. And I've like kept up with reading technical articles because it's interesting to me.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Do you go to any of the races or?
I have in years past, but the ticket price is really like, I would say about 4X of 10 plus years ago. And like the last time I went, it's four times as much. So it becomes really expensive to do it. And there's not a proper road course. I guess Circuit of America is in Texas, but the other two, like Miami and Las Vegas, are not interesting courses to me.
So, okay.
Like I wouldn't pay the money to go to those courses just because they're not interesting courses to me.
Yeah. And
inside the racing obsession, I love tracks. So like,
So the other ones are like street courses, like through the streets of downtown or something.
Which
like
is really cool for many racing series because they're able to race close together and side by side. But Formula One is hugely aerodynamic dependent for its grip. And when you have a bunch of aero on a car, behind it, there's a wake and there's not that aero effect. So you cannot follow, I cannot follow Donnie closely because that aero effect there. So it makes it much more difficult to pass and run close together.
Okay.
And a street circuit doesn't have much margin for air. So they're less risky than maybe on a track where there wasn't a wall a few centimeters away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is like watching the Netflix series. Mm-hmm. Like it's insane how quick those cars are.
Yeah.
And like the ability of the drivers to be able to maneuver and...
Yeah, I think what's really eye-opening that is if you go watch IndyCars, and then you go to a track like Circuit of the Americas in Texas, if Formula One cars were there, I think it's every 4 or 5 laps they would lap an IndyCar. So like when you watch an IndyCar go around, you're like, whoa, that is fast.
Yeah.
A Formula One car is not one or two steps. I mean, it's a bunch of steps faster. That's insane. Incredible.
Yeah.
There's just so much aerodynamic
downforce
there. Yeah.
Crazy.
It is.
So let's talk about like the business a little bit and like what you guys focus on there and, and go from there.
Yeah. It's been an import repair shop for 30 plus years now. But we've kind of brought our focus closer down to the cars that we really know well. And that starts with BMW. And BMW owns Mini Cooper and Rolls-Royce. So that's included when I say that. Those three brands we work really, really well with. Mercedes-Benz is number two for us. Porsche would be number three, but we have one business, but two shops within it. There is the German car repair shop where there's BMWs, Mercedes, Porsches, and then we have an exotic car shop where we do mostly Rolls-Royce and Bentley, but then Ferrari, McLaren, Aston Martin, Maybach, brands like that over there too. And that side of it is somewhere we're really trying to get into concierge service where we pick up a car, we drop off a car. We have a system that's built so if you don't want to, you don't have to do any phone call. Everything can be seen along with photos and individual estimates on your phone or computer. And you can improve those things from a computer, from a phone. And I'm not trying to put off the phone call, but I just think a lot of people, it works well for them to be able to do things via phone or via text. And, you know, we've got several clients on that concierge note that we pick up cars from Sarasota, Ocala. There's a couple cars we trailer from Orlando, you know, so it's been something we've been really working on and trying to push because it seems like people with those high end ultra luxury vehicles really prioritize time.
Yeah.
And so if you can save them time, that's a big, big deal to them.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
What made you guys focus on, like these brands of cars? Is it just like the passion for cars in you that
yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there's a couple pieces there. There's been a Rolls-Royce dealer in St. Pete for a long, long time. I don't want to say a year. I'm going to be wrong, but like I would say close to 60 years.
Wow.
So there's a lot of cars here for a long time. And the gentleman that I'm partnered with now, he started in the late 70s working on Rolls-Royces and he's had a following since this time. Mm. So up until about 2 years ago, we did just Rolls-Royce and Bentley there. But then I found a very unique gentleman named Hassan that, was in Southern California and he was at a Rolls-Royce dealer and then moved on to something at a smaller shop. And we brought him in because he is factory trained on Rolls-Royce. He's got a bunch of time with Ferraris, McLarens, Lamborghinis, and we're trying to move forward in that segment with that part of the business there. And concierge, like the pickup and drop off has been big, you know, mm-hmm. for that side there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. What is it that you love about like that, those branded cars? Or is there like any favorites that you have there?
Yeah. So I think I've, you know, in terms of like European cars and ultra luxury cars, I feel like I've worked with them all and they all have unique pieces. Mm-hmm. Nothing sounds better than a Ferrari, you know, that's naturally aspirated and singing. I love the luxury and I can appreciate a Rolls Royce and a Bentley. If I had my pick, I love Porsches. I just think they're the best put together. I love sports cars. So it's just, nothing feels like it fits me as well. And it drives like how I want a car to drive, like a Porsche.
So, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Does everyone have like their own like favorite at the shop?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So like Hassan, the guy that leads the exotic car department, it's like Rolls Royce is number one. I mean, by far. Okay. And then even like, we don't do a lot of Subarus, but we have a Subaru guy in the shop.
Okay.
We have a guy that's in parts, that's big rotary guy, Mazda rotary guy. So yeah, I would say the majority of us all gather towards this BMW thing. We all kind of have something BMW in our life that started getting it going.
Yeah.
Is there
like a different skill set that's involved with each different brand or in it, you know, is that changed like as you get into like the more luxury cars, higher end?
Yeah. I mean, you know, lower end German cars are not as sophisticated as a high end German car.
Yeah.
Like let's say a BMW 2 Series versus a 7 Series. But then when you step up to a Rolls Royce, it's another level. And many cars, they're good at like hiding a module here or there because they'll have 10 to 25. Rolls Royce, they have like an area that they stack in. I mean, there's so many modules and they do unique things, like you're cruising down the road and it can see a bump's coming up. So it knows to let that left front damper be softer to hit that bump, you know, in the left rear. I mean, it does all these things with a camera that's looking at the road. You leave your house every day and there's a corner that you take slowly. Most cars have to downshift. It knows by GPS, this guy leaves this place every day, be in second gear when he comes out of this corner. Whoa. So it has just tons of unique technology, but with that comes a lot of difficulties when something goes wrong. And one thing can really affect a lot of other things, you know, which makes it hard to diagnose things sometimes and be confident that this is the only issue.
Yeah.
You know,
that's wild. I didn't know cars get like,
like over 100 modules on board.
That's crazy.
It is.
how has that changed a lot? And like, is that just for Rolls Royce? Has that been like their thing for a long time? Or is that as technology's changed the last 10 years, like they've stepped up?
They've been overly complicated as long as I can see.
Okay.
But they, you know, have a legacy in you know, really their life began in the early 1900s. And they, in my opinion, at that time made cars probably better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very unique customer. She's about maybe 82 that drives a 1911 Rolls Royce over to us to be serviced once in a while.
Wow.
And I've been 45, 50 miles an hour in this 1911 car and it's quiet and it's easy to drive down the road. It's about the size of a small school bus. It's humongous, but it's amazing how well made that is, because I've spent some time with like Model Ts and stuff from Ford and they're very loud and worn out kind of feeling in terms of steering, suspension. So it's a pretty different world at that time, you know, 100 years ago. So,
which is wild to think that a car that old still mm-hmm. function as well as it does.
Yeah. And this 80 some year old lady, who's one of the coolest customers we have, drives that over. And I think she sold it. She had a 1928 Bentley that was unrestored too, that she would drive over. I mean, this is really, really cool.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's got to be fun to see, you know, all the different cars that come in and, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And we just had Festivals of Speed in St. Pete, which is a big car show. And for that, we kind of pull a little bit on our nice customers that are like willing to let us use some cars. And we had some really awesome cars out there. So yeah, that stuff is really fun and still gets me excited. Like I was younger, like a kid, you know what I mean? When you get something really unique, it's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are people that are driving some of these higher end cars, are they like using them as daily drivers or just like just for joyrides or?
I would say majority it's a weekend car, but there's definitely people that daily drive Rolls Royce or Bentley. I don't know about a Lamborghini, but probably somebody.
Yeah. That makes sense. So I want to touch on, like, when we first talked, we talked about like the customer service piece of like what you guys are doing and like how much like importance you guys put into that. So can you touch on that a little bit? What's up, Palm Harbor? It's your host, Donnie Hathaway. If you are looking to stay up to date with all things Palm Harbor, then visit my website. It's palmharborlocal.com. Super simple. You can sign up there, join the locals, where I'll be sharing more information on local events, local history, and what's happening in Palm Harbor. You know, I really want to create and add more value to you as a listener for spending your valuable time tuning into my podcast. So join me there, keep listening, and remember, together, we keep Palm Harbor local.
Yeah. Our brand promise is unrivaled transparency. And I think in general, this industry has a bad reputation for taking advantage of people. And I think a lot of it happens through poor communication. I genuinely think from being on the repair side for so long here that people think they're doing the right things. And then the customer gets here and then it's like they're upset, right? It's something. Mm-hmm. And it's just because there wasn't good communication. So I didn't develop this software, but we use a unique piece of software called Shopware. And Shopware is able to give us a few things. A technician, when he looks at a car, can take a photo of issues he's seeing. He can put notes. So you have notes and photos from a technician. On top of that, we can build an estimate. Let's say it's rear shocks for your car. We can build an estimate for rear shocks. And that estimate, unlike when you're hearing something over the phone, hey, it's $939, mm-hmm. you can see a parts and labor breakdown. There's a yes and a no, you know, if you want to approve it or not there. When you, let's say you approve that or a couple other things, you're like, what's my total? A lot of times that would be a problem years ago is like, well, I told the customer it was 1900. They got here and it was 2000, right?
Yeah.
Why is there a difference?
Right.
That never happens anymore because this system is live 365, 24/7. So there's always a total with tax and everything included there. So it's really been about, hey, here's what we're looking at with the car. We are car advisors. We want to give you as much information as possible about your car because I believe if people have good information, they can make good decisions.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's valuable in any industry.
Yeah.
You know, like that's one thing we try to do here in real estate at Berkshire Hathaway. It's kind of the same thing. Like we're advisors. We're here to provide you with all the information and data that we have available. Yeah. And then you are the one that is making the decision.
Yeah. Right? I like phone calls, right? I like enjoy that part of the job of talking to someone, but we've pulled it. And this is probably 3 years ago. We had over 80% of customers that said they would prefer just a text message.
Oh, wow.
So I would say
with like their quote, like here's what we found.
Yeah.
Okay.
And everything really can happen this way. So when you call and make an appointment or email us, you get an email back that says, here's what you're coming in for. Here's an estimate. The customer signs it. This tells us that, hey, they're coming, right? Mm-hmm. They're pre-approved. Then when you show up, you can literally like kind of just toss the keys. So if you're in a rush, like there's no like have to chit chat, have to get a vehicle info. We get all that on the front end.
Oh, yeah.
So when you walk in, it's pretty quick and easy. And this policy, procedure started at the beginning of COVID because nobody really wanted to like interact with people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I got this system. I can make it so nobody has to touch hands. Right.
Yeah.
So we made a box where they dropped the keys. They were pre-approved. We took the keys, cleaned the car all up. And then when we're done with it, we'd send a link for text to pay. They'd pay it before they got there. I'd be like, hey, your key's on hook number 5. They'd come to hook 5, pick it up. It was a big boost for us then because there weren't a lot of auto repair shops, like maybe doing adjusting that, like that. But since then, it's just been like a good thing to keep as far as the text to pay, the pre-approval, because it just makes it where you can do it on your time. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Have you... do you think it's because of the clients that you guys have that are, you know, a little more like disciplined in time and that sort of stuff that they just like that aspect of it?
Yeah, for sure. And I don't have the correct kind of facility to be set up like a quick change place, right? Like some places you can go and just be like, hey, I'm going to get an oil change. I'll be here 20 minutes. I'm not set up where we have something that works like that.
And people are dropping everything off.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Most stuff is drop off. And I'm a big advocate too for really like letting the car drain. And I've ridden through some quick change oil places in years past. And it doesn't feel like enough time, you know, to me to like let the car sit there and drain. But it works differently for different people. You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's talk about two books that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I haven't heard of these books. So I'm curious to learn like your thoughts on them. But Get Different and Clockwork. Why are those important to you?
They're both Mike Michalowicz books. And I think I just like the style that he delivers things. But Clockwork is really about, you know, for an auto shop, in many businesses, you see things routinely, right? Mm. And so having a system in place for those things and having a procedure that you can then help employees learn how to do, right? And then be able to hold people accountable to that. And I found that's like a huge deal on both sides. It's like, you've got to make a procedure, right? But then mm-hmm. you've got to hold people accountable after mm-hmm. you've trained them too. And that book is big about that. And that's really helped me with that shop. And I have a procedure guide there. So it was a big piece, like helping me improve my procedure guide. Okay. I already had this before Clockwork, but then like really looking and zoning on some processes. Get Different is, you know, the premise that there are so many, like, it's not specific for an auto repair shop, but there are so many auto repair shops. What are you doing to stand out?
Yeah.
You know? And some of those things for us, you know, I really would like lean back towards the brand promise is like, we're really trying to be transparent about everything here and upfront. We put, at least in my area that I can tell, the leading warranty of the area, 3-year, 36,000 miles. And then because we don't offer like a waiter quick change deal, we do complimentary Lyft and Uber for people that are, mm-hmm. you know, around St. Petersburg mm-hmm. or Pinellas County here. So we've been trying to really work that angle, of the transparency, because it just feels good to be honest and transparent about things too. You know, it's easy.
That's so true. Like, it once you get to that point where it's like, I'm just going to tell the facts, and if they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah.
You know,
and I've had many conversations where someone's like, Ryan, $5,000 worth of work. And I'm like, yeah, like that car needs it. And they're like, what should I do? I'm like, if I'm your friend, and this is for a particular, maybe older BMW or something, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to tell you to move on. Cause in 6 months, you're going to be happy that you got rid of that car.
Yeah.
But I've also had the conversation with people that want to put 10K in their car, and it makes sense because it's an expensive car, right? That they can't replace easily. So it goes both ways, but that's why I say, like, we've got to be car advisors, you know? Yeah. And that's constantly when I'm like coaching with the staff is I'm like, this is more about educating people than it is selling anything. We don't want to sell something to them, right? We want to educate them. Here's why this is recommended.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to, mm-hmm. right? And then it's up to them.
So, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Was it difficult for you guys to figure out like what was your different angle, or was that like a pretty simple thing to do?
There's an experiment or a piece they have you do when you go through Get Different there.
Okay.
Where you talk about your queen bee role.
Okay.
And basically, I'm not going to be able to explain this, right? Because it's been a little while since I read it, but everything is done for the queen bee, right?
Yeah.
Everything is done to protect the queen bee. She is production, right? Okay. Of more bees. So people protect the hive, people build the hive, right? There's all these different jobs going on, but what is the queen bee role? Well, for the queen bee, it's right, I need to make more. For us, I thought, we just need to constantly be transparent, right? Like we have to be, and it's not just, we talk about this in the shop, it's not just with clients, it's with each other. Mm. And I use this rule that I feel like's really worked well for us. If it's not written, it's not true.
Mm.
And it's because in the past, and mostly in another shop I was at, someone would say something to somebody and then they would want to hold them to it. And it's like, man, that guy was putting a brake on when you told him that. Or I was on the phone and you told me something. It's like, we have a really good system inside of Gmail. We have like something called G Suite, and they just have an easy system to communicate in there. And so there's really no excuse. And then that holds us accountable to each other, I feel like, more. So it's helped, you know?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Where did you have like any business experience, like running a shop or anything before, or you just kind of like?
No. So I, you know, been in this kind of role, like a service advisor and then a manager for about 17 years now. There's pretty great training if people are willing to take care or take it on. But the current company I've been with about a little over 10 years.
Yeah.
They're part of a group called ATI, the Automotive Training Institute.
Okay.
And I haven't taken everything from them, but I've gone pretty hard as far as like classes. whether it's a marketing class or a financials class or a culture class, like okay. something I've really tried to work on at the shop that's made a huge deal internal, you
yeah.
know? So
yeah.
No previous business experience. I do like to say in that spot that from when I was 15 to 21, I got to work with a gentleman named Chris Keenan, and he was a great soccer player, but he started a minor league soccer team up in Michigan where I'm from, and then did soccer camps. And he was successful enough that then he built an indoor sports facility where they did indoor soccer and football and everything. And I don't have, it wasn't my business, it was Chris's business, but I got to go through these things with him sure. and see how it was built. And Chris, I mean, I haven't talked to him in 15 years, but he's been a very influential person for me,
yeah.
you know, like across business, you know, yeah. like that. So, yeah.
Cause it seems like, yeah, like your drive or to, you know, want to be better, want to grow the business the right yeah. way and stuff is,
yeah.
is unique, right?
Well, and that, I mean, really that's Chris.
Too. Yeah.
You know, I mean, like that's yeah, what yeah. it felt like it. And when people worked for him, he knew something about you, right? He was good about interacting with you. People wanted to be on Chris's team,
sure.
right? And,
yeah.
and that's what I've worked on at JB. And I feel like, man, like we have an awesome team where it's like everybody kind of gels, and it's
yeah.
taken, a lot of time and effort to get there,
yeah.
you know? So,
yeah, yeah. that's cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned culture, like talk to me about that. Like, was there a, like, hey, this is going to be our culture, or did it just kind of fall into place?
So some things like core values have been built a little bit around, that unrivaled transparency that's helped with it. But I think the biggest thing that's helped is I do a you and I call it, it's a one-on-one with every employee once a month.
Okay.
And during that time, everyone's got a goal, right? That they're either working on long-term or short-term. And it's something we can talk about at that time. And I feel like me talking one-on-one about someone's goal, like makes them maybe more pumped up about it. But then now we've kind of gotten to the point where one team member will talk to another team member about like what their goal is going on. So then it like really increases that team feeling. And then just a couple of good moves recently have really changed the shop. Like we changed mm-hmm. our service manager, and it's just been mm-hmm. a great change for
yeah.
us. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we were talking before about Traction, the book.
Yeah.
Like they have a concept in there, like right people, right seats.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like that same
it thing. It is. Right? And I don't know if it's from, I don't remember what book it's from, but there's a phrase too that was hard for me to accept for a while because we've gone through a lot of growth
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
That the people that got you there aren't necessarily the people to go to the next level with. And that was really hard for me to accept. But I think once I stepped back and looked at that, it really became pretty obvious that like there were a couple people in my organization that like weren't on the same path with us.
Yeah.
And now that we've got kind of everybody aligned, it really feels like a different deal to me. And I think everybody else too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big part of that, right? Like that's yeah. huge.
Well, and some people like in a growing business just want it to be how it was, right?
Yeah.
But I tell people all the time, like we have about an 80-page procedure manual. I'm like, pretty much any procedure in there is open for debate, right? If you think there's a better way to go about it, I'm open for that.
Yeah.
But at that time, those people just didn't want to move forward with us.
Yeah.
Know? So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I see that like, that just made me think of like people in small, you know, we talked about smaller towns, right? Like some yeah. people want to keep it the way that it was,
yes.
you know, back in yes. 1950s or 1960s.
This is a Safety Harbor battle right now, for sure. Yeah.
I think the Safety Harbor, Dunedin,
yeah,
like Crystal sure. Beach is some of that too.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
yep.
yeah.
No, and you know, I'm at a very old St. Pete business, so there's a little bit of that still downtown. I mean, oh, as amazing sure. as it is, but there is
yeah.
still.
So. I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. So your favorite Porsche, which what are you picking?
Man, this is really hard because I would be like Jerry Seinfeld if I could and have many.
Did you ever watch his show? Like so, Coffee and Cars or whatever?
I haven't watched called? Much of it. I've watched some
I've watched a couple
yeah.
of those, yeah.
No, I mean, very respected, and Jay Leno, I think, is on yeah. one of them too. So yeah. Jay Leno is like the coolest car collection I've seen.
Yeah.
Man, this is tough. So I'll give you two. So I'll say race car is an early 70s Porsche called a 908/3.
Okay.
And for something I would drive on the street, pretty much the car from Bad Boys. So it's an early 911, early 90s 911 turbo.
Okay.
But they identify it by the chassis. So they call it 965 is that one. So yeah, a 965 doesn't have to be black, but that's the last two wheel drive turbo from Porsche, aside from GT cars. So yeah,
nice.
That would be cool. And I really like that era. So
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, thanks for being here.
Yeah, man.
I
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
That was super fun. Thanks, Donnie.
Yep.
Awesome.